Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. If any of you were with me last week, I must apologise for the technical problems, which meant we had to finish the programme rather short. And of course I have some material left from last week, which I will include in this week's programme. It does mean I had quite a few items of general news, but the messages from the spiritual hierarchy and the Galactic Federation are back, and I have one this week from Sheldon Neidel. Apparently last week he was at a conference and therefore there was no message available. I have also from last week the five healing articles, that is healing from UFOs, which I hope to get in. And then if there's any time left, I hope to finish up the program with spiritual messages. So without further delay, I will read the Sheldon Neidel message for this week. It reads, we return after a short hiatus to discuss some truly interesting developments with you. As you may already suspect, many secret agreements have come into effect while we were on our break. Our Earth allies have been able to get a range of necessary conditions drawn up against the last dark cabal. These rules make it even more certain that the collapse of this cabal and its illegal US regime is quite imminent. I just stop there and make the comment that it's interesting that they say that the rules which they have arranged will make it certain the collapse of the cabal and its illegal US regime is quite imminent, which I take to mean that it will be legally backed. And that means there will be no force used or no covert actions, at least that is my interpretation. So I think there is a number of legal processes going ahead to remove the illegal US regime. It reads, many banks around your globe are being forced to adopt new ways even before this cabal becomes history. I comment again that, that I find that very interesting because the major banks are controlled by the Illuminati. It's interesting to think that within their hierarchy that they can be, it reads, forced to adopt new ways. So I think the action behind the scenes is setting out the pathway bringing a new form of banking into place, which of course is vitally necessary. I read on, this is shifting the protracted financial global chess game to the advantage of our Earth allies. We are overseeing this closely and concurrently making plans to ensure that our own various projects also come swiftly to fruition. We are close to putting into office a series of new regimes whose purpose is to bring peace to a troubled world and allow great prosperity to come into the lives of Mother Earth citizens. These changes also set the stage for the formal announcements that lead us to mass first contact with your world. While we are excited by this progress, we hasten to add that we bring a sober realism to bear at all times on our assessment of what is currently taking place on your world. This dark cabal has proven itself very adept at reversing previous sticky situations that seem to spell its doom. Our present efforts aim to temper these risks by bringing in new players who have the potential to thwart the cabal's counter moves. It is quite simply time for the madness and the chaos created by the dark to come to an end. Hence, we have rigged the game in favour of our Earth allies. As you know, doing this has not been easy. In fact, we had to call in a number of galactic chips to enable us to achieve the position we are now in. In the past, the special strength of the dark lay in its cunning. This trade was learned at the side of some of the most hardcore Ancharan empires of this galaxy. Using the advice of our new and changed, i.e. ex-Ancharan allies, gave us ways to remove any possible slither room from the Dark Cabal's strategies. These actions are now paying off. Now, if you are unfamiliar with the name of these extraterrestrials called the Anchan. I would just mention that they are the reptilian extraterrestrials and largely are seen as working on the dark side. But naturally, that does not apply to all of them. I suppose it must be very much to our advantage to have some of them now working for the light, therefore able to tell us that we can counteract their strategies. It reads on, as we work the last cabal into a corner, those who control that organisation are engaged in the usual immoral activities, which in the past allowed them to escape any tight spots. But now our new strategies are working as planned. Consequently, we are expecting very soon to see the completion of deliveries and the exit of the present US regime. These events will open the way for many things that are to be announced publicly by the new transitional government. Throughout this schedule, we intend to position various operatives whose purpose is to oversee the carrying out of the many provisions of the agreement of 1998 that will ensure first contact. These provisions promise your world that the great global prosperity can lead your societies towards a higher level of cooperation, which in turn is to establish world peace and bring an enhanced understanding of each other. In this environment, the deployment of long-suppressed technologies can permit you to clean up global pollution with an end to world hunger. Being this close to the time of your world's transition is most satisfying for us. Nevertheless, our work is just beginning. We may need to make sure that agreed-to stipulations are indeed carried out by our Earth allies. To this end, we have carefully worked out a number of ways for the divine decrees to come into being. Although our degree of intervention in your affairs grows by the day, it adheres strictly to the amounts that are acceptable to heaven. Accordingly, we are ever mindful of the fine line between what we wish to do and what actually gets carried out. Our analysis of your world is constantly re-evaluated as we update our databanks with intelligence and directives from our many liaisons and their diplomatic counterparts. Further, our task is to do this within the scope considered legitimate by heaven. Our spiritual hierarchy liaisons also relay to us their sacred decrees, and these documents serve as our policy parameters. Result is a scenario heading us toward first contact. Heaven is deeply committed to your return to full consciousness. Her purpose is to manifest the divine plan on planet Earth and throughout this solar system. It was Heaven's call for first contact, which brought us in great numbers to your shores nearly two decades ago. As we matured this operation, we discovered both your strengths and your weaknesses. We can tell you that for the most part, you are a moral people driven to commit many immoral acts by a group of dark minions known by many names, both known and unknown. This is the time when these dark secret rulers give up this immoral governance of you, and when an age of light claims you. We restate this in order to remind you that the conditions presently surrounding you are divinely decreed to go away, and that a worldwide action to this effect is well underway. We're part of this, and our actions can and will bring you into a new age of light. The many fleets that daily watch over you are dedicated to a first contact that brings you to the very threshold of full consciousness, and then with ease delivers you to your full consciousness destiny. Doing this has been quite an experience. We are now engaged in a series of activities that are to ensure the fall, at long last, of the first domino. Thereafter, a veritable deluge of interesting events can ensue. Right now, the last actions in this operation are taking place. The legal transition of the present state of America to its former constitutional status, along with the global delivery of your prosperity fund, constitutes the first domino, and it has been one tough nut crack. Nevertheless, our liaisons assure us that this domino cascade is ready to snake its way around the world. Our first contact commanders are clearly awaiting the final orders to carry out first contact. We sometimes feel as if we have been spending a lifetime preparing our fleets for this much-awaited moment. Everyone involved has practiced their role to the point where they can do it in their sleep. We laugh at ourselves as being most overtrained first contact landing fleet in the entire Galactic Federation. So you can be very assured that we are more than capable of pulling off the first contact at a moment's notice. Every scout ship sent out on its daily rounds knows what to do if suddenly called upon. All potential contingencies are gone over in each crew member's mind at least a million times. And all assigned motherships have the scout ship release points memorized. We can safely state that we are indeed ready to launch the first contact mass landing. The first contact is something very special, and the landing truly deserves the vast amount of training we have put into it. Understandably, we dearly wish to bring this auspicious day forward. To this end, we recognize how vital is the present series of actions we are engaged upon both above and on your world. And many liaisons, as well as those from our fleet who currently live among you, are busy bringing this state forward as swiftly as possible. We are indeed indebted to those among our Earth allies who, from the start of our more direct involvement in these matters, encouraged us in this role. We are also most grateful to the many of you who, in your dreams and meditative thoughts, have given us ideas on how best to proceed. Remember, we are indeed victorious. Today we went over the latest developments preparing your globe for first contact. Our increased involvement can lead us all to success. The key elements are this fleet and, most importantly, you. Your continued courage and focus are critical. We sincerely thank you for all you have done and continue to do to make this mission's outcome a success. That is the end of Golden Idol's message for this week. Now I shall move on to the general news. But you might wonder sometimes why I include some of the more, as you might see it, unpleasant news. But I feel it's necessary to know what actions the Dark are taking, and also, of course, the likely result of any actions against them to remove the Bush administration so that we can go ahead with the first contact and all the other changes that are lined up waiting for us. Now, first general news I have here comes from the Associated Press, from Amy Westfeld. And from New York, it reads that a woman who died of a lung disease 5 months after September 11th was added Wednesday to the medical examiner's list of attack victims, marking the first time the city has officially linked a death with the toxic dust caused by the World Trade Center's collapse. Felicia Dunn-Jones, a 42-year-old attorney, was caught in the dust cloud while fleeing the collapsing clouds on September 11, 2001, and died of sarcoidosis, a disease that causes inflammation and scarring in the lungs. He died on February 10, 2002. This is Dunn-Jones' exposure to the World Trade Center dust contributed to her death, and it has been ruled a homicide, said Chief Medical Examiner Charles Hirsch. The city said the September 11th death toll at the Trade Center now stands at 2,750. Dunn-Jones will be listed on the September 11th memorial when it opens in 2009. A spokesman for the World Trade Center Memorial Fund said, Dunn-Jones' family had asked last year that the medical examiner add her name to the death toll. But Hirsch wrote at the time that his office could not link her death to the exposure with certainty beyond a reasonable doubt. Since then, a doctor for the Fire Department of New York published a study that found firefighters who worked at Ground Zero contracted sarcoidosis at a much higher rate after September 11th attacks than before, linking these firmly to the dust exposure. There we are. things still roll on where 9/11 sat. I have another article here, which is about Charlie Sheen, and he responds to the comments about him in the New York Post. I'm looking to see if I've actually got a note as to where this came from. Often reach me by emails, and I haven't always got the links. Okay, I haven't got one here, but I've told you it comes from the New York Post. It is actually related, I see, to Paul Joseph Watson and Alex Jones. They are on the website Prison Planet, so putting two and two together, say that this report appears on their site. This comes from Monday this week, and it reads as follows. The New York Post and others have undertaken a concerted attack on 9/11 truth, erecting a wall of unified lies and spin in an attempt to make it appear if Charlie Sheen and Rosie O'Donnell are backing away from the movement. In an article entitled Sheen Rethinks Nutty 9/11 Film, tabloid hack Richard Johnson writes, support for the loopy 9/11 documentary, Loose Chain, which argues that the World Trade Center terror attack was part of a secret US government conspiracy, is quickly losing steam. A source tells us Charlie Sheen is having second thoughts about being involved in an updated version of the flick, which has a huge following on YouTube. As Page Six reported in March, Sheen has agreed to narrate, ridiculously, presumably to give it some needed Hollywood sizzle. As we have come to expect from Johnson, his hit piece is factually bankrupt. Charlie Sheen never agreed to narrate the movie. He has been in talks to explore this possibility, but will not come to a final decision until after the film is completed. Johnson and the New York Post got it flat wrong when they reported back in March that Sheen had agreed to narrate a new version of the loopy film. The film being the YouTube documentary Loose Change, and have now resorted to stacking lie upon lie to cover their initial screw-up. No such agreement had taken place, so this notion that Sheen is now having second thoughts about the project is nothing more than total spin to cover the fact that the New York Post initially lied in claiming the deal had been struck when no contract had been signed. It also represents a calloused attempt to derail the entire project by sowing seeds of doubt that aren't even there and attack the 9/11 truth movement by falsely claiming one of its most prominent advocates deserting the cause. Similar tactic was employed when Bill O'Reilly threatened Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban with the consequences if he bankrolled Loose Chain. Alex Jones was invited to act as a consultant on Loose Chain. Final cut at the very start of the project, and has since taken a role as an executive producer. In contributing to this article, Alex made it clear that Loose Chain is still a work in progress, and is being carefully edited, vetted, and fact-checked, with new interviews and information being added all the time. The film is by no means complete, and the understanding all along was that Sheen would only make a decision on whether to narrate the documentary after he had had a chance to watch the final version. Finally, comment from that article that the internet leader in activist medium, which is Prison Planet TV, gets access to hundreds of special video reports, audio interviews, books and documentary films. And if you subscribe, you also get instant access to their hugely popular forum where you can network with like-minded people, meet up and get active. I mention that because I think they're doing a wonderful job to get truth out about 9/11. Still another comment on 9/11, which comes from a report that circulated yesterday. Again, unfortunately, I haven't got the direct source from which it came. It was an article raising questions about 9/11 who got demoted for disloyalty from the army. And it reads, he couldn't have foreseen the one email would derail his career, put him on his way out of the army, one email speculating about events that millions of people had questioned for the last 6 years was all it took. Who really benefited from what happened that day, he asked rhetorically. Not Arabs, but the military-industrial complex. Boswell concluded, we must demand a new independent investigation. Voicing these opinions, Sergeant Boswell was stripped of his security clearance, fired from his job, demoted and ordered to undergo mental health exam. Now, this email went out to 38 people from the San Antonio Army Base. As if that weren't enough, thought Sam Houston's chief of staff, penned a letter accusing Sergeant Boswell of, quote, making statements disloyal to the United States. That's all I have there from that article. But I feel it's sad because I wonder where freedom of speech and democracy has gone to. Now come to an article which came from the, or came through, website counterpunch.org, and it's one by Judith John Sharp, and it's called Saga of Our Son, Lieutenant Commander John Sharp. Not an overlong report, but I'll read it all because I think it's quite an important one. He is under investigation for anti-war sentiment. This web report reads, for those of you who have not yet been aware of this saga, we thought you might like to know of the US Navy's proceedings against John Sharp, active duty lieutenant commander who edited two collections of essays, says here the Neo Fond volumes, which include essays of the editors of Counterpunch, condemning the war in Iraq based upon the Christian just war doctrine and the Western tradition of domestic and international law. Due to these proceedings, John is facing formal reprimand and possible dismissal from the service. It reads, here's the latest on the naval investigation. John was notified on May the 2nd by the Staff Judge Advocate General of his ship, the USS Carl Vinson, that the investigation, technically called a preliminary inquiry, was completed. All this time, contrary to what we were initially led to believe by various comments made by John's superiors, that was his commanding officer and executive officer, the investigation amounted to simply this jag reading through the volumes of material, articles, books, etc., that John has over the years edited, written, or promoted. As a result of this inquiry, no charges of any kind were brought relating either to Navy Regulation 1167, banning supremacist activity, or to the Uniform Code of Military Justice provisions against conduct unbecoming and other general kinds of banned activity. At least the SPLC has on this score lost round one. The JAG did, however, present John with an official notice that he was being summoned to a non-judicial punishment hearing, which is a formal but non-judicial, that is, it is not a trial, not in the courtroom, and does not result in criminal convictions. And so he was invited to this non-judicial tribunal. Military commanders are authorised by UCM Article 15 to convene for alleged misconduct by members of their command. The allegation against John, which was to be heard at the NJP hearing, was six instances, they call them specifications, of an offence against UCM Article 88. Now, the article says, any commissioned officer who uses contemptuous words against the President, Vice President of Congress, the Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of a Military Department, the Secretary of Homeland Security, or the government or legislature of any state, territory, commonwealth, or possession in which he is on duty or present, shall be punished as a court-martial may direct. And it says, through the ACM, there is an article which refers to the court-martial. Article 15 of the UCMJ allows punishment for minor offences via NJP. And the specifications were is what's quoted against him. A quote by John in an internet newsletter of an allegedly contemptuous article Saint Francis wrote in the days following 9/11. Points 2 and 3, comments John made to Maria Eiler, Ella, in an internet interview on May 17, 2006. And points 4, 5 and 6 were related to editorial comments that were included in the books of the Iraq War that John edited. If you want a bit more information about all that, you can go to the website neocond.info. Say it again. Most people in military service had much stricter rules regarding their activities. But isn't it sad again that this type of policing, if you like, of everything you say and do goes on? Now I come to an article posted by Makovich. This came through on Monday, 7th of May. And it was written by Anne Wright from the brilliant site truthout.com, and she was a guest contributor. And the article was headed, What Congress Really Approved, Benchmark Number 1, Privatising Iraq's Oils for US Companies. The article reads as follows. On Thursday, May the 24th, the US Congress voted to continue the war in Iraq. The numbers called in. The members called it supporting the troops. I call it stealing Iraq's oil, second largest reserves in the world. The benchmark or goal Bush administration has been working on furiously since the US invaded Iraq is privatization of Iraq's oil. Now they have Congress blackmailing the Iraqi parliament and the Iraqi people. No privatization of Iraqi oil. Reconstruction funds. The threat could not be clearer. If the Iraqi parliament refuses to pass the privatization legislation, Congress will withhold US reconstruction funds that were promised to the Iraqis to rebuild what the United States has destroyed there. The privatization law written by the American oil company consultants hired by the Bush administration would leave control with the Iraq National Oil Company for only 17 of the 80 known oil fields. The remainder two-thirds of known oil fields and yet undiscovered ones would be up for grabs by the private oil companies. Well, it says in brackets, but guess how many would go to the United States first, given to them by the compliant Iraqi government. There we are. Another facet. What was really behind war. Now I move on to an article here, came out on the 23rd of April. It's headed 60 Minutes. CIA official reveals Bush, Cheney and Rice were personally told that they had no weapons of mass destruction in the fall 2002. And this program came out. I think the title here is, because I'm not familiar with it, yes, this is correct, it's called Tonight on 60 Minutes. And Tyler Drumheller, the former chief of the CIA's Europe division, revealed that in the fall of 2002, President Bush, Vice President Cheney, and then National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, and others were told by CIA Director George Tenet that Iraq's foreign minister, who agreed to act as a spy for the United States, had reported that Iraq had no active weapons of mass destruction program, and thereby followed an interview. I've only got a part of it here. I'll pick out some of the more potent points, because he was obviously asked to confirm that the statement I made earlier on was correct, and he answered that yes. And he was asked, there's no doubt in your mind about that? And he said, no doubt in my mind at all. The interviewer Bradley said, it directly contradicts, though, what the President and his staff are telling us. The Drumheller said the policy was set. War in Iraq was coming, and they were looking for intelligence to fit into the policy that justify the policy. Or, I would add, little PS there, saying yes, and unfortunately, our Prime Minister in Great Britain also was part of the farce to try and convince us that there was evidence of WMD in Iraq, as we know now, quite unsuccessfully. My next article here was one which came out on May 30th, that's Wednesday this week, by Terence Hunt, an AP White House correspondent that came to Washington. And he said that President Bush envisions a long-term US troop presence in Iraq, similar to the one in South Korea, where American forces have helped keep an uneasy peace for many years, White House said Wednesday. The comparison was offered as the Pentagon announced the completion of the troop build-up ordered by Bush in January, the last of about 21,500 combat troops to arrive, were an army brigade in Baghdad and a marine unit heading into the Anbar province in western Iraq. Brigadier General Perry Wiggins, Deputy Director of Operations for the Joint Chief of Staff, said there are now 20 combat brigades in Iraq, up from 15 when the build-up began, and a brigade is roughly 3,500 troops, which means that overall, Pentagon said there are 150,000 US troops in Iraq, and that number may still climb or support troops move in. Just referring to the last article I read, in case you wanted to read further about that, I forgot to mention the website, so if you can go to thinkprogress.org, find the rest of it on there. And I've got a few items left to do with my general news. As I mentioned, I've got more this week because of the numbers I couldn't get through last week because of the problem. Now, this comes from the, again, a very good website called What Really Happened Bomb. And it's a short article telling us that Tuesday, which would have been Tuesday this week, the Bush administration said it will fight to keep meat packers from testing all their animals for mad cow disease. And it reads that the Agricultural Department tests less than 1% of slaughtered cows for the disease, which can be fatal to humans who eat good beef. But Kansas-based Creekstone Farms Premium Beef wants to test all of its cows. Larger meat companies feared that move because if Creekstone tested its meat, advertised it as safe, they might have to perform the same expensive test. The writer of the article says, forgive me, but isn't this the same administration which said the other day that China should open its doors to US beef? What is this administration and larger cattle operators so terrified of regarding the testing if our cattle food chain is so safe? Good question. And as we know only too well, Great Britain had cow disease result in a very horrible death. I now move on to an extremely important article here, which you can read on the website called aetnet.org, and that's spelled H-E-Y-E-T-N-E-T. AETnet.org, nothing to do with ETs actually. This is talking about former collaborator who disclosed details of US ordered assassinations, sectarian bomb attacks targeting Iraqi civilians. And I'll shorten the article a bit because you'll get the gist of it here quite well. It's an Iraqi who asked not to be identified, and he disclosed some of the US activities such as assassination bombings at markets aiming to spark sectarian fighting amongst Iraqis so as to facilitate the partition of the country. And he went on to describe how he worked with the US occupation troops for about 2.5 years, and then he was a soldier in the Iraqi army in the war of 1991 and during the withdrawal of Kuwait. And he sought asylum in Saudi Arabia with dozens of others like him. And he was recruited into the forces. Well, there were US military forces who were looking for Iraqis, volunteered to join them and be transported to America. Well, he was one of them. And in 1992, he was taken to America specifically to be trained. And he said that they received military training and intense courses in English and how to carry out acts like assassination. And he went to say that during the 2003 invasion and subsequent war, he was transported back to the interior of Iraq to carry out specific tasks assigned him by the US agents. He said, describing various actions that he carried out across the border, and he said his mission was basically to spread rumours among the Iraqis, such as that the American army had already got into such and such a city, and that it was on the outskirts of Baghdad and other such things, which he said were part of the reason for the rapid collapse of the Iraqi forces. He went on to say that they were given tasks which were mainly to carry out assassinations in the streets of Baghdad. He mentioned that if they failed, they were actually killed for failure. He mentioned various names of people that were target of these assassinations. And he said that the Americans have a unit, he called it the Dirty Jobs. That unit is a mix of Iraqis, Americans and foreigners, and of the security detachments that are deployed in Baghdad and other Iraqi cities. This unit doesn't only carry out assassinations, but some of them specialise in planting bombs and car bombs in neighbourhoods and markets. This unit carries out operations which wanted people when the American army does not want killed or arrested. And he went on to say that sometimes the US troops themselves placed the bomb inside cars as they were being searched at the checkpoint. Another way was that they put bombs in cars during interrogations. And so it goes on. I think I've said enough for you to understand what the article is about. Just wanted to make the point that dirty tricks like that go on the whole time. I think that all comes under the flag of what generally called the false flag wars. If that wasn't to read enough, an article came out written by David Rupi, New York, May the 1st, from the ABC News. And he was talking of the period of the early 1960s when America's top military leaders reportedly drafted plans to kill innocent people and commit acts of terrorism in US cities to create public support for a war against Cuba. It was codenamed Operation Northwoods, and the plans reportedly included the possible assassination of Cuban emigres, sinking boats of Cuban refugees on the high seas, hijacking planes, blowing up a US ship, and even orchestrating violent terrorism in US cities. And the plans were developed as ways to trick the American public and the international community into supporting a war to oust Cuba's then new leader, Dominguez Fidel Castro. America's top military brass even contemplated causing US military casualties, writing, "We could blow up a US ship in the Guantanamo Bay and blame Cuba." And casualty lists in US newspapers would cause a helpful wave of national indignation. Details of the plans are described in Body of Secrets, printed by Doubleday, new book by investigative reporter James Bamford, about the history of America's largest spy agency, the National Security Agency. However, the plans were not connected to the agency, he notes. Plans had the written approval of all the Joint Chiefs of Staff and presented to President Kennedy's Defense Secretary, Robert McNamara, in March 1962. But they apparently were rejected by the civilian leadership and have gone undisclosed for nearly 40 years. And the report reads finally, Well, these were joint chiefs of staff documents. The reason these were held secret for so long is the joint chiefs never wanted to give these up because they were so embarrassing. That is what Bamford told ABCnews.com. But there we are. I suppose you might consider that fighting the communists at that time, that you would allow for any type of undertaking like that. I have to feel that involving innocent people and, in some cases, proposing to use US citizens to get the backing they wanted is really, really bad. Now, Venezuela, it is reported, are to sue CNN. I don't know where the reports come from here, unfortunately. But anyway, it reads, Venezuela says it will file charges against US cable network CNN for linking President Hugo Chavez to Al-Qaeda. It says it will also sue Venezuelan TV network for encouraging Mr. Chavez's assassination. The move comes a day after popular Venezuelan TV network RCTV went off the air after the Chavez government cancelled its broadcast license. Information Minister William Lara has presented what he says is CNN footage displaying pictures of Mr. Chavez juxtaposed with those of an Al-Qaeda leader. Mr. Lara says CNN also aired a story about the Venezuelan protests that used images taken in Mexico of an unrelated story. CNN broadcast a lie which linked President Chavez to violence and murder, he said. Now, in all fairness, I'll read the denial which came from CNN. And they issued a statement strongly denying, and as they said, being engaged in a campaign to discredit or attack Venezuela. The news network has acknowledged a video mix-up, made a detailed correction and expressed regret for the involuntary error. Regarding the Al-Qaeda network, they say unrelated news stories can be juxtaposed in a given program segment, just as newspaper page or news website may have unconnected stories adjacent to each other. The Venezuelan government has also filed charges against local network Globovision for what it says was indirectly encouraging the Chavez murder by airing footage of the 1981 assassination attempt on late Pope John Paul II. Finally, CNN has said, in my view, this television network, in this specific part of its program, committed the offense to assassination against the Venezuelan head of state. That is what Mr. Lara said, and of course it wasn't CNN, as I first said, before I made that last quote. But I think it's people get called out doing naughty things like that. Sometimes they come out with rather weak excuses. Now, still got a few general news items here. It's almost taking up the rest of the program. Anyway, I shall press on. During the last 3 months, and this is quite an unusual article for my general news, but it's worth mentioning, that is 3 months, 2006, there were reports being received from commercial beekeepers of an alarming number of honeybee colonies dying in the eastern United States. So says Mary Ann Frazier, Apiculture Extension Associate of Penn State University. While the problem didn't start last year, it's been going on several years, it is getting progressively worse, and it's not limited to the East Coast anymore. He said, since the beginning of the year, beekeepers from all over the country have been reporting unprecedented losses. The losses are staggering. One beekeeper lost 11,000 of 13,000 colonies, another 700 of 900, another 2,500 of 3,500, and another virtually all 10,000. The problem is so large, beekeepers are starting to wonder if their industry can survive. Frazier calls the die-off colony collapse disorder, CCD, and questions what could be causing CCD. Dennis Van Engelstorp is acting state apiarist with Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture, and he says, preliminary work has identified several likely factors that could be causing or contributing to the die-off of bees. Among them are mites and associated disease, some unknown pathogenic disease, and pesticide contamination or poisoning. In other words, they don't know what's killing the bees. There's an unknown killer of honeybees that threatens the nation's entire food supply. Yes, pesticides, disease, and mites probably play a role, but there's an underlying cause of CCD that nobody's willing to talk about. It can lead directly to the death of the bees, or it can weaken the bees enough that they're more susceptible to the pesticides, disease. So the article went on. I haven't got time to read too much of it, but you get the gist of it from that. I did read in a separate article that some of the problems, it was suggested, relate to the many types of radiation that now exist upon the Earth. They felt that maybe they were using the bees, bearing in mind they have some sense of direction that seems to be associated, where that's like birds or similar animals, they somehow connect and read pulses. May or may not be true. There was another article I saw from a person who has bees which service organic crops, and he said he had no trouble at all. But maybe there is a point of what is really happening. Short note here from a live vote asking, should President Bush, George W. Bush, of course, be impeached? This report came from Jonathan SE, quite sure what that means, but the article was on rumornilnews.com, and the results were overwhelming. 88%, 478,217 responses said yes, George W. Bush should be impeached. Of course, there is a tendency for people who want to follow that line to vote wherever they can to make their views known, I think more so than the people who couldn't care less. But even so, that I think is a remarkable figure. Now, Ron Paul is making quite a name for himself as he pushes to be president in 08. And in a poll that was taken and reported by Stridorus, whether that may be or whoever he may be, again, I'm sorry I haven't got all the facts, but I'm guessing he can be found on youtube.com, which is evidently where this report was taken from and circulated by email. But in the poll that was taken, Ron Paul polled nearly twice as many other votes as all the other Republicans, that is, Republican candidates for president combined. That, of course, was voted on by the YouTube subscribers. Just to give you an example, Ron Paul polled 12,103 votes, and the second best was Romney, 2,059. Apparently, Congressman Paul also had twice as many YouTube subscribers as Barack Obama, who had 5,988, and nearly four times as many as Hillary Clinton, who had 3,517 subscribers. So there you are, interesting. He's making a big impact. I hope he keeps going. I'm sure his name is penciled in to be part of the new government, or the interim government, once the Bush administration is moved. These people are coming to the fore. I have mentioned it before, but I list Denis Kucinich also as one of the most likely people to make it. Another little article came through about Rick Paul, and it said, and this came from Washington Reuters, that he assigns reading to Giuliani. And he's saying, long-shot Republican presidential candidate Ron Paul on Thursday gave on Thursday gave frontrunner Rudy Giuliani a list of foreign policy books to back up his contention that attacks by Islamic militants are fueled by the U.S. presence in the Middle East. I'm guessing he made a reference to that in one of his speeches, or perhaps an article. Somebody challenged him to back it up with some evidence, and he's evidently done that. I think the best politicians are the ones who don't make statements, has taken that up. Right, it looks to me as though my general is just about going to finish up this programme tonight. So my UFO articles will still hold good for another week. So there's a question on the web saying, where have all the viewers gone? And they were talking about TV's worst spring. Apparently a startling number of Americans drifted away from television. That was in the last 2 months, and this report came out on the 22nd of May. Apparently more than 2.5 million fewer people were watching ABC, CBS, BBC and Fox than at the same time last year, so statistics show. They put categories on here from where this came from. They call that mainstream media. Not quite sure what the inference there is, but just commenting the particular television stations they mention there, I have to say they do tend to be the ones that support Bush administration, so perhaps people are wising up. They're not showing the same interest in the stations that don't report truthfully what is taking place. Another item of news here, a bit more, shall we say, pleasant, delightful speed, was posted by Jonathan B. There is a link, apparently, about his work on worldnetdaily.com. I think this article came originally from Joe Kovacs, and you'll find his name on that website. And it talks about John Antius, 63, who lives in, well, lives on Sanibel Island, Florida. And he's a broadcast engineer who formerly owned several TV and radio stations before returning to his place in Sanibel Island. 5 years ago, he was diagnosed with a severe form of leukemia and began a quest to find a kinder, gentler way to treat the disease compared to harsh chemotherapy. And in October 2003, he had an epiphany, pill cancer with radio waves. He then devised a machine that emits radio waves in an attempt to slay cancerous cells while leaving healthy cells harmed. His experiments in fighting cancer have become so successful, one physician was quoted as saying he could be getting close to grabbing the holy grail. But in the midst of his experiments, as he was trying to take salt out of water, Antius discovered his machine could do what some have thought was impossible, burning water into fuel. And he said, on our way to try to do desalinization, we came up with something that burns, and it looks, in this case, that salt water perhaps could be used as a fuel to replace the carbon footsteps that we've been using all these years, i.e. fossil fuels. Antius said, it's for real. The possible ramifications of the discovery are almost mind-boggling, as cars could be fueled by salt water instead of gasoline. Hydroelectric plants could be built along the shore and homes could be heated without worrying about supply requirements. It doesn't have to be ocean salt water, he said. It burns just as well when we add salt to tap water. There's something to give you a bit of thought, isn't it? In response, of course, the traditional coffins have tried to pull him down, sort of more or less saying it must be impossible, and they said he is burning hydrogen. That breaks down chemical bonds between hydrogen and oxygen, but they seem to find some faults with the process which he uses. But then that is par for the course, isn't it? When people discover something that the powers that be don't want you to know about, commercial businesses don't want to come onto the market, they try and back it down. Well, I think I've got to end the programme there. I had one final item of general news. That's not urgent. That can carry over till next week. And you've probably gathered now that on BBS Radio, we do close the programmes at 5 minutes to the hour. So, looking at it, thinking it's my time to go. So I will thank you all for being with me, and I hope you'll be with me next week. At long last, I'll get round to my UFO reports about healing UFOs. Thank you very much. God bless you all.